This hour of Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for America.
You can shake your head all you want to, Commissioner. You have said today that there's no evidence of criminal wrongdoing. And I'm asking you what criminal statutes you have reviewed to reach that conclusion.
I've reviewed no criminal statute.
Fighting for Idaho.
They got a phone call from Senator Risch and a phone call from Senator Crapo saying, you know, we'd like you to support our governor and the establishment and just take Senator Risch's son's letter to be the fact.
Fighting for you.
Just recently read a few articles on the effectiveness of performing the Heimlich maneuver on drowning victims before starting CPR. I was in the right place at the right time. There's over 250 Boise firefighters who would have done the same thing.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, looks like it's going to be a great day tomorrow for the Boise Music Festival. And by the way, a big announcement here. If you're looking to ride the rides, and a lot of people have said, Kevin, what's up with the carnival? It's the same carnival that you have at the Cherry Festival in Emmett, all the rides, and you're thinking, well, I don't know if I should do it. Today is your last chance. Closes at midnight tonight to get these carnival wristbands. Right now, all day, carnival wristband, only $25. How about this? All day carnival wristband and Boise Music Festival ticket, $35. Again, that closes at midnight tonight. Go to BoiseMusicFestival.com for the very latest. A man that we wish were coming to the Boise Music Festival, but he's got a lot going on in Mississippi. Our great friend, the great conservative crusader, Brian Fisher, joins us at 580 KIDO. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Boy, I thought of you for the last couple weeks, and I've been so distracted with I don't know what here. You must have had a field day on what's going on in Mississippi.
Oh, man, it has been an absolute circus down here, Kevin, as a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware. And what this kind of reveals, what's going on in Mississippi is not that dissimilar to what's going on right now in Idaho. I try to stay in touch with what's going on back in my home state, and I know there's a real battle in the Republican Party right now between the Tea Party wing and the establishment wing. You've got that same thing on steroids in Mississippi. What happened here, just to give a quick backstory, there's a state senator by the name of Chris McDaniel. He's a Reaganite conservative with us on all the values issues, articulate, strong, winsome young guy. And he took on the entrenched incumbent, Thad Cochran, who's been in D.C. for 41 years. He's part of the problem. He's part of the reason we're $17.5 trillion in debt. And a vote for Senator Cochran, obviously, is a vote for the status quo. So a lot of Mississippians said, look, we need a change. Well, Chris McDaniel actually won the greatest number of votes in the primary, but he didn't get to 50%. There was a third-party candidate, drew enough votes away to send the thing into a runoff. And what the establishment Republicans did, this is reprehensible, really, but what the establishment Republicans did is they actually ran robocalls and distributed flyers in African-American neighborhoods to convince African-American voters that Chris McDaniel and the Tea Party were a bunch of knuckle-dragging racists and KKKers, and they better go to the polls and vote for Senator Cochran or everything. We were going to go back to slavery. That was sort of the implication. And it was establishment Republicans who were doing this, sending this message into Democratic strongholds to get them to turn out. And this is one of the hazards, by the way, of an open primary. We've got an open primary in Mississippi, so folks can vote in either one of the two primaries. Part of the problem right now, just quickly to get to this, part of the problem right now is, according to Mississippi electoral law, if you vote in the Democratic primary on June 3rd, you cannot vote in a Republican runoff on June 24. It's one or the other. Now, the strategy for the GOP establishment was to get as many Democrats as they could to go out and vote crossover on June 24. Well, a lot of those voters had voted in the Democratic primary on June 3rd and therefore were ineligible to vote in the Republican primary, but now there's a pretty good reason to believe a lot of them voted twice, even though they weren't allowed to do. Nobody has to say it's malicious. It could be just inadvertent, you know, overworked poll workers, crush of voters, easy to miss kind of some of those details. So that's being looked at right now. The Cochran campaign is trying to put off the certification of the electoral results as long as possible, so the McDaniels campaign has as little time as possible to review the polling results. But this kind of shows you what you get when you have an open primary, where this is really an election that was determined not by Republican voters, but by liberal Democrat voters. They have picked our starting lineup, and it's just shameful. And I saw the fight we had to go through in Idaho to get a close primary. It was bitter. You know, this is the why. What we're looking at in Mississippi is why the GOP establishment likes open primaries, because it gives them another tool to go after a genuine conservative Republican and try to kneecap him.
Brian Fisher with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580KIDO. Brian, you've been around. You're a smart guy. Were you surprised at the depths the alleged gentleman, Senator, the senior senator, Senator Cochran, went to? Of course, he's got Haley Barbour. He's got Trent Lott. He's got the boys. He's got the money. And if not, why? You know, you never see Republicans stooping to this level when they're going after Democrats.
No, and it, you know, it disappointed me. You know, I actually greatly disappointed in Haley Barbour, who has always struck me as a, you know, moderate Republican, but a decent guy. And, you know, he's admitted today that these robocalls that went into heavily Democratic districts that painted the Tea Party and painted Chris McDaniel as racist, they came from his PAC. So this was a Republican PAC, Republican-generated PAC. This is Republican money, establishment Republican money, from a PAC that's controlled by former Governor Haley Barbour and run by his nephew, I think, Henry Barbour. And he admitted today, Daily Caller had the story this morning, he admitted that, yeah, these robocalls came from us, and they painted the Tea Party as a bunch of knuckle-dragging racists. So, you know, it disappoints me, but it kind of shows you what happens when the GOP establishment is threatened. And it's a reminder of just how much of a threat to the GOP establishment the Tea Party represents. They are scared to death of the Tea Party. They spent $22 to $23 million, Kevin, in this latest primary cycle, $22 to $23 million just to try to defeat the Tea Party. So people that are out there saying the Tea Party is dead, we can write the obituary, they're finished. Well, someone needs to tell the GOP establishment that they're dead, because they just spent $23 million trying to defeat the Tea Party. So obviously, tremendous amount of grassroots energy that's released to the Tea Party effort. And I will tell you, Kevin, there is a lot of agitation among grassroots conservatives in Mississippi right now. I mean, the outrage is palpable. They feel this election has been stolen, that they've been jobbed, that there was electoral fraud involved in this. They are not happy campers.
Brian Fisher joining us here at 580KIDO. By the way, Mr. Fisher, Director of Issues and Analysis for the American Family Association, hosts a talk radio show, focal point on American Family Radio, and posts on the AFA-run blog Instant Analysis. Of course, we remember Mr. Fisher from his great conservative efforts here in the Gem State. We miss him. We love having him back here. You know, it's interesting. You take a look at the national narrative. People talk about the Cantor loss. But then you take a look at Lindsey Graham, and people say, look at what he did. Well, Lindsey Graham pretty much bribed off any more conservative congressman that would run against him in South Carolina. He had six or seven Tea Party conservative folks. If it would had been one-on-one, perhaps Lindsey Graham would have been out.
Well, and I think that's one of the lessons. If you compare the Brad Cantor race, the McDaniel-Cochran race in Mississippi, with the Lindsey Graham race, you know, in both Virginia with Eric Cantor and in Mississippi with Chris McDaniel, you had one conservative grassroots Tea Party challenger, one taking on an entrenched incumbent. And McDaniel won the Republican primary in Mississippi. You know, Cochran won the Democratic primary, but it's clear that McDaniel won the majority of the Republican votes in the runoff. And, of course, Bratt unseated Eric Cantor. So when you have six Tea Party folks trying to take on an entrenched incumbent like you had in South Carolina, probably not going to work. And, of course, you're not always in a position to control that. If people want to run for office, we shouldn't try to stop them. But it's clear that from a strategic standpoint, it works best when all the conservative energy can gather behind one qualified, capable candidate.
Brian Fisher with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning here, 580KIDO. Could this be, you know, just a sign of the death throes of perhaps the establishment? They may win this one, but the growing discontent, whether it's Boehner, whether it's Cantor, whether it's Cochran, whether it's others, will eventually take them over.
Well, I think there's a tremendous risk that the GOP establishment has run here in Mississippi, and it's probably actually too late to unring the bell. I mean, the damage to the Republican establishment in Mississippi, I think, has already been done. You know, because the real energy, the momentum, I mean, the infantry, the boots on the ground, the people that make the calls, the people that distribute the literature, the people that organize the events, all those are grassroots conservatives. They're Tea Party types. They're the ones that provide the heart and soul of the Republican Party. They may not have a much money to give, but they've got time and energy and passion and commitment. And what the Republican establishment has done in Mississippi has completely turned these people off. you got a lot of people, I'm hearing from them every day, they're just finished with the Republican Party. They've had it. They're done. They're going to write in Chris McDaniel's name in November as kind of a protest vote. You know, there's kind of a quirk in Mississippi law where write-in votes on Election Day, this is a weird thing, but write-in votes don't count. It's an odd thing. I talked to the electoral office of the state of Mississippi yesterday to confirm this, and yeah, they've got a write-in line there, but if you write in somebody's name, it doesn't count. I don't even know why they have it there. So it's just a bizarre thing. But you've got a lot of conservatives, I think, in Mississippi. If these electoral results stand and Cochran is certified as the winner, you know, they're done voting for establishment Republicans. They're done with that, and they're going to vote, I think, in Mississippi. A lot of them are going to write in McDaniel, even though they know their vote isn't going to be counted because they have had it. So I think it's really kind of a suicide mission on the part of the establishment Republicans, and this shows the desperation, the depths to which they will go to try to demonize and vilify a member of their own party and try to convince Democrats that a member of their own party is a KKKer and a racist. It's really despicable.
Ryan Fisher, Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO. Let's move on to a couple other issues that we have so many going on, but we'd love your insight on the licensed invasion of America happening on our borders.
Well, this is an amazing thing. You know, I think Representative Louie Gohmert said yesterday, we are under invasion, and that's not an exaggeration. You know, I think this is clearly directly attributable to President Obama, and I actually will lay some of the blame off on guys like Marco Rubio and Eric Cantor and John Boehner and other Republicans that are talking about the DREAM Act, because the word has gotten to Central America. It's being published in their newspapers down there that if you get into America under the age of 16, you're in for good. Now, the law says you got to be here before 2007, but nobody knows that. Nobody remembers that. Nobody pays any attention to that. And they know that that provision of the law is not going to be honored, that if you get in, you're going to get to stay. You know, they discovered pages of talking points that are given to these immigrants when they come to the border, what to say, you know, to make sure that you get to stay. Now, these people largely are not fleeing violence. They're not fleeing gang wars. They're coming for benefits. They're coming because they've got a promise that if they get to America, they can stay. And obviously their parents have means. I mean, it's not an inexpensive proposition to get your child from Guatemala and El Salvador and Honduras to the border with America. So a lot of these kids are not coming from impoverished backgrounds. Their folks have enough resources to get the scratch together to pay for their trip. But this is just a reminder to me. I just think as far as immigration is concerned, we just need to secure the border. You know, you look at what's going on there, Kevin, the conditions that these children are being held in, it's unconscionable. This is a humanitarian disaster. I mean, these children are being kept in these wire cages that are topped with barbed wire. They look like detention camps. You know, Sheriff Joe Arpaio down in Arizona said, look, my tent camp is a five-star resort compared to what they're putting these kids in. You know, the Border Patrol picked up 378 kids under the age of two, unaccompanied kids under the age of two, coming across the border. So this is a humanitarian disaster of the first order. And the first thing we need to do is to seal up that border for the sake of these children. We don't want any children to be subject to conditions like that. And yet we have hundreds of thousands of them now coming in. Tens of thousands, going to be 100,000 by next year, coming across the border and being put in these horrible conditions. It's unconscionable.
More coming up with our great friend Brian Fisher at 580KIDO. Let's get you to traffic. Good morning.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. Don't forget your last chance to get tickets, carnival wristbands for only $25 for the carnival tomorrow at the Boise Music Festival, available at boisemusicfestival.com. With us once again, our great friend Brian Fisher to talk culture and everything that is good and wholesome in America today. Brian, we take a look at some of the big stories. 57% of millennials having kids out of wedlock. We talk about traditional marriage being redefined, and now we have just marriage itself being an opt-out kind of thing.
Well, you know, the reality is, Kevin, if we care about young children, vulnerable young children, and I think every society is going to be graded on how it treats its most vulnerable citizens. Our children are the most vulnerable citizens that we have. They are completely subject to the decisions and the environment created by the adults in their world. And we know without any question whatsoever that the optimal nurturing environment for young children is in a home with a mom and a dad who are married to each other. I mean, the Bible has had it right. Our culture's had it right all along. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes children in the baby carriage. I mean, Montavani had that right back in the 60s. You know, that sequence is what's best for culture. It's families that provide stability. They provide tranquility for a culture. They provide an environment where the next generation of citizens can be trained and groomed. They can grow up in a secure environment. They can grow up in an environment where they learn what it means to be a father, where they learn what it means to be a husband, where they learn what it means to be a mother, where they learn what it means to be a wife, and that they can grow into adulthood ready to enter into marriage and start families of their own and perpetuate that. But when that cycle is broken, when you have children growing up in a home with a missing parent, it's a horrible thing to do to a child, then we know that their chances of failing academically are higher, their chances of getting in trouble with the law are much higher, their chances of dropping out of school are much higher, their chances of being able to develop economic self-sufficiency are much lower. It's just a catastrophe for young children. So I believe this is why we fight to protect natural marriage. That's why we think it's important to elevate protection for marriage to the state constitution. I still believe we need to elevate protection for marriage to the federal constitution, not because we don't like people, not because we hate anybody, but because we love our culture. We know what it takes to produce a successful, happy, intact, stable culture, and we love kids. We care about kids. We want the best possible environment for them, and that's in a home where they're raised by two parents who are married to each other, a mom and a dad.
Brian, it's amazing, though, how our culture has redefined itself. I'm sitting here reading emails and stuff from people, and they're talking about their in-laws, and I'm going, well, to have in-laws, you have to be married.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like they take it for – no, you don't have in-laws because you're not married. Doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of defining the terms down now, and we know, for instance, a lot of people cohabit now. It's fairly routine for couples to cohabit before they get married, but we know that about 80%, 80 to 85% of cohabiting couples break up. So cohabitation is not a kind of a training ground or a proving ground for marriage. It's a training ground for divorce because these couples don't make it. Most of them don't make it to the altar. And when they do get married, the chances of divorcing within the first 5 years are far higher, about double what they are among couples that wait to live together until they get married. So once again, Kevin, you just go back to what the Bible said from the very beginning. You know, a man and a woman for life, sex is reserved for marriage, get married first, then comes sexual intimacy. God loves sex. He created it. He designed it. He knows it's a powerful and potentially destructive as well as a potentially life-giving force, and that's why he's instructed us, reserve that for marriage, channeled into marriage, and you'll find that it works every time it's tried.
Brian, finally, what do you think is going to happen with the Supreme Court shooting down the president's recent recess appointments, the abortion buffer zone, the idea that police can look at your phones without warrants? Any insight on whether or not these rulings will have an impact on when they take a look at same-sex marriage and the Constitution coming up probably next year?
Well, you know, the president now has lost 13 times before the Supreme Court. 13 times his hand has been slapped down by the Supreme Court. 9 of those, I believe, have been unanimous. These recess appointments, that was unanimous. This ruling on the buffer zones around abortion clinics, that's not specifically related to President Obama, but that was unanimous. I don't know what's going to happen with the marriage ruling. You know, I believe the secret here, Kevin, I've said this before, but I believe the secret here is to have a governor, even if the Supreme Court rules to impose same-sex marriage on every state in the union, we need a governor in a conservative state that has a marriage amendment to stand up and say we are going to defy the Supreme Court. We are going to defy the federal court. People in our state have spoken. We've amended our Constitution as the Constitution provides. We've read the federal Constitution. It doesn't say a word about any branch of the federal government having the authority to dictate marriage policy to the states. We are going to reserve marriage in our state for one man, one woman. We are not going to issue any licenses to same-sex couples in our state, no matter what the Supreme Court says. I think that's the only way that the tyranny of the Supreme Court is going to be broken.
Brian, if people want to get a hold of you from Idaho or listening online, what can they do?
AFA.net is our website, AFA.net. I've got a Facebook page for my radio program. It's called Focal Point, two words, Focal Point. Go to your Facebook page, open it up, and you go straight to Focal Point. I'd be happy that you can message me there, follow me there, encourage you to do it. My Twitter handle is Brian J. Fisher. Encourage people to follow me on Twitter.
Brian, thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Kevin, always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, our great friend Brian Fisher joining us here. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
News. Sean Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. If you missed him last hour, he's back. Our friend, the real chairman of the state Republican Party, Barry Peterson, joins us once again. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning again, Kevin.
Well, good to have you with us here. And the reason why we were just talking about loyalty, and you called in and said you had a few things that you'd like to talk about to get your side of the story out, and you're not going to get it in the liberal press.
Well, that's amazingly true. In fact, I've posed a comment, and it's not unique to my mind. I had heard it before, I'm sure. As to the media, when you choose which truths the people may and may not know, then in my mind they abandon the concept of the free press and, in fact, fail to protect the people from the overreaching power of government. And what's happening in our state today is not too much unlike what happened on the national scene in the last two presidential elections.
Well, and we're seeing that, Barry. So when we last left you, were talking about the changes at the Republican Party. You've hired a new staffer. You've had another one resign. Somehow this is newsworthy.
Yes, it is. And it's a phenomenal thing. Mary Tipps had worked there for maybe about 2 months, and she gave me a letter of resignation, and that was on Wednesday. And it was so the letter was so aggressive. And after I'd read it and thought about it a minute, I said, Mary, this is not what happened. And I'm referring to the leaving of Trevor Thorpe. I said, this letter does not convey what happened, because he worked there, Trevor Thorpe, the previous executive director. He worked there last Wednesday, a week ago. And he was in there Thursday, and he was in there Friday, and there was a transition of information and stuff like that. And then the last scheduled day of the pay period was Saturday, and that day we're not normally open. And so that he'd already notified me 2 or 3 weeks earlier that within a week or so of the convention, he wanted to leave to pursue education. So that was the time determined, and so Saturday was the last day that he was paid through. But in her resignation, she made it sound like it was a vicious event. Well, there's always two sides to a story, but the only thing I could think of why her letter was so aggressive in that regard was because somebody had put her up to it. And the purpose of it was to get another opportunity to throw spears and arrows and darts at me in the press. Now, I don't know that it happened, but I imagine that it did happen.
Well, Barry, let's talk about this. What's it like to have the entire might of the establishment plus their acolytes in the press against you?
Well, you know, it's not fun in any sense of the word, and I should report to you that innumerable letters my wife and I have received here at our home and phone calls of people from around the state indicating that they're praying, that they hope we have the strength to stand up against this onslaught, and that we can be a representative for the people in the party. And so they're kind of a silent group, if you will, as to the media. None of them have the media savvy, for instance, that Mike Tracy has. But still, there is a reservoir of people, and I'm sure they represent pretty close to 50% of the population in the party who are very supportive, and I'm grateful to be a participant with them in the process.
Well, Barry, you look at the published reports saying that, you know, they gave the impression that nobody was there at the party, that the phones were going unanswered. Is that true? Are people there ready to go to work?
Well, I've been there every day this week. And Mary Tipp's resignation was tendered on Wednesday. And Judy Gowan, she came to work on Thursday. So every day this week there's been people there. We have a fine person in the party, Ronalee Linsenman from Canyon County, who comes and volunteers a couple days a week. So, and there have been other volunteers as well. So, no, it's not abandoned. And the pay for me to be there is really good, I can assure you of that.
Well, Barry, based on the fight for the control of the state Republican Party, how do you see this all playing out? Because you have speculation that the establishment's going to try and get you before a meeting that you've called. How do you see that playing out?
You know, I don't know how that will go. It'll be interesting to see, because the group that put that together, I don't know specifically who the leaders are. I know that the meeting was held via the coordination of Jason Risch. I'm aware that the meeting was made up of eight of the 18 positions in the executive committee. And our rules, according to our rules, the executive committee meetings are supposed to have 10 days notice, and they're supposed to be called up by the chairman. And that didn't happen. So this group, for whatever reason, they've assumed the power of the party. And in fact, six of the eight have replaced the officers in the state party, for the interim anyway, by their vote, and with all the officers except the chairman. So it's a unique event. I don't know that it's ever happened in the party. It isn't addressed in our rules, except that it's not included in our rules. And they've set this meeting, and at the same time they set the meeting, they had five counties call on the chairman, as per the rules, with at least 15 members of the committee, as per the rules, and asked me to set a meeting. So I set a meeting, and right behind me, they come along, the group from this executive committee, they set a meeting. So if we pursue this deal where we have two meetings, if we're determined to do this, we're on a collision course, because they can get a quorum. And what I mean by a quorum, in our rules, 51% of the counties have to be represented. Every county has at least four voices. So if 23 counties have at least one person show up to the meeting, they have a quorum. The meeting I called, the same rules. If 23 of the counties at least have one person from their county show up, we have a quorum. So this is a collision course designed for a split in the party if we both ride the horse out to its fruition. Isn't that an amazing circumstance? Unforeseeable, really.
Indeed. Barry Peterson with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580KIDO. So, Barry, who, if anybody, backs down? Should anybody back down?
Well, from even before the primary election, with one word of participation from the governor, all of this would have gone away. Several times before the convention, I was willing to step aside. During the convention, me and the other candidates were willing to step aside. And even at this date, I'm willing to step aside. But the party people, the people in the party, they have a reasonable expectation that they get to have a voice in the selection. So it has to be a willingness to change course, if you will.
Barry, do you believe there is an orchestrated campaign by the establishment and the media to get you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the governor said to me before the primary election, he said, Barry, I'm not going to pick a candidate. I'm going to let the grassroots work make the decision on the party chair. Immediately, within a day or two of the primary election, thousands of dollars were spent on ad flyers that went out to the homes in Ada County, Canyon County, and Elmore County that said the Republican Party chooses, for instance, Senator Tim Corder went against me, chooses Tim Corder for precinct committeeman. Thousands of dollars had to be thrown into that campaign. And so he, in effect, he has stolen the grassroots, if you will, from their regular position. He did it legally. The campaigns were honest. But there was a misconception, like the Republican Party was recommending the candidates he chose. And so he did gain control, for instance, of Ada County. And so you have 400,000 people selecting a delegate list to represent them of 102 people at the convention, and only one of the 102 were outside of the establishment.
Looks like you're outgunned, Barry. You got any reinforcements?
Well, you know, it's a marvelous coup. He's pulled off. It's a marvelous coup. It's what he wanted to do, and he's got it done, and my hat's to him off in that regard.
And you mean the governor?
The governor, but the rest of the state, much of the state, they're still willing to stand up for. And when it really comes down to it, Kevin, to me, the party, the essence of the party is freedom, smaller government, and lower taxes. And that's the brand we ride for. And whoever represents the party at the chairman level, I'm sure they're going to get the same consequence. All that the membership of the party asks is that when they meet twice a year, that their hopes can be expressed to the lawmakers. And in our case, we happened to hit during the famous Obamacare. And the party has voted four times in opposition to Obamacare. 100% of the federal legislators voted against the health care exchange run by the government. In Idaho, along with the other representations of the party, I gave them to all the legislators, and included in that was an opposition to a government-run health exchange. And in so doing, we've incurred the wrath of the governor. From my perspective, and it's mine alone, this onslaught is because the party would not bend over relative to the health care exchange.
So, Barry, you're holding up, though, okay, personally.
Well, I did get my 8-hour sleep last night. I've had two of those in the last 3 weeks.
Well, that's a trend.
Yes, it is. But this morning I feel much fresher because last night I did get a good night's sleep.
Well, Barry, we appreciate it. And like I said, you've got your friend here.
Hey, my friend, I want to comment. You know, you remember when the media selected John McCain for the Republican nomination?
Sure.
Immediately after that, what'd the media do? They ate his lunch. You remember they selected Mr. Romney for
Yep.
the Republican nomination to the presidency? Immediately thereafter, they ate his lunch. And maybe this is a repeat, because I can assure everybody that the media is not going to be kind to the Republican position on the ballot when we go into this fall election.
Well, Barry, I've got to run at that one. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, our great friend, the chairman, Barry Peterson. Bye-bye, Barry. Let's get you to work safely.
It wasn't the result we wanted, but at the end of the day, we're going through. That's all you can ask for.
I have to begin by congratulating Team USA.
Must hear radio every morning.
Thank God it's
Kevin Miller on 580 KIVO, Idaho's first radio station.
Thank God it's
756, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIVO. You know, this is an idea that we should have thought of. You've heard about the folks at the border that are looking for underwear. The government has requested that Americans donate 42,000 pairs of underwear. That's right, because of all the illegals coming in. And we're talking about medium to six extra large. That's right, to meet the basic clothing requirements of the thousands of illegals detained by INS. Well, and look, I'm not going to tout my own horn here, but this is when I'm very proud of someone that I've known for almost 20 years, and that's William Gein, president of Alipac. He's come up with an idea urging Americans across the country to send their quote-unquote gently used underwear to the president and to the Speaker of the House. Obama and Boehner have proven once and for all that their talk of passing immigration reform, amnesty, instead of enforcing America's existing borders and immigration laws, only brings more unwanted and destructive illegal immigration, Bill Gein said. Our friend from Alipac, the group that's urging people to do it. Bill Gein says, instead of using our tax money to buy illegals 42,000 pairs of new underwear, we would like to send to the illegals and the D.C. politicians a message by mailing them our used underwear. And some of our pairs are in really bad shape due to the bad economy and all the jobs illegal immigrants are taking from Americans. Now, that sounds like a brilliant radio station promotion, but it proves the point. How in the world can you fund the world when you have real, live, God-fearing, hard-working Americans struggling to live our beautiful dream? The government must get its priorities back in order, right? 580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's get you to traffic. Thank you, Larry. Kevin Miller in the morning. It is 61 in Boise. Coming up next, a conservative objective view from the youth of today. This next. And plus, we're going to have the state treasurer in giving us free money. All that before Glenn Beck, only with the pump one. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.